something for the weekend. Good morning. It's Saturday. It's Trina here and John Kenny is in studio. Good morning, John. How's it going?
Great, Trina. Great. Absolutely. Am I speaking too loud into the microphone? Shall I go back from it?
I think you're pretty much spot on. Stay right in front
okay,
of us.
All right. Okay. Okay.
God, I can't believe this loud man is in
the
studio.
It's great to be here, Trina. The last time I saw you, you were on the other side of the glass, were you?
That's it. I was a producer back then and looking after the lads in the morning. And I remember that time I was about 4 stone heavier and you came in and you lifted me in the air and I thought to myself, this man is going to end up, I don't know, with a broken back or something. I don't know what was going on that day with you, John.
I'm mad for lifting gettles and women. I'm still mad for that.
Whatever. And you know what? He came into studio and demanding all kinds of things, teas and coffees and croissants and the like, weren't you, John? Wouldn't even let me go to the toilet.
Very demanding. See, where I go, we have to have the fresh croissant in the morning, you know.
It's very Limerick, isn't it?
Oh, very Limerick. Very County Limerick, darling. One is from the county here, you know.
Come here. I read an article about you earlier on.
Go on,
tell me. I was a bit scared, right?
Right.
Because it said in the article that, and you admitted this yourself, you can sometimes be a cranky owfella. And I'm afraid, in case you might be today, are you going to be nice to me or are you going to be a cranky owfella?
Oh, no, geez, I am. No, I'd say I'm fairly, I'm okay most of the time. I am.
We're all cranky the odds.
We have our moments, you know. I know, yeah, we do. But
kind of questions do you hate that will make you cranky? Don't ask them.
Oh, God, no. It's not so much questions. I don't know, really. What annoys me, I suppose, is not when you've been asked a question. It's when somebody asks you a question. They're asking you something, but there's an alternative motive for asking you. You know, the kind of cloaked kind of thing where we're pretending or asking you that they're not really sure about something, but they know the answer already and they want it to lead to someplace else.
Right.
Is that too tricky? Did I explain that now to you?
No, you didn't at all. Give me an example.
Oh, it's very hard, very difficult. You know, they'd say they would know something about so-and-so and so-and-so and they'd ask you, has so-and-so and so-and-so now, are they still in that business or what are they doing now? When they know well that, you know, probably that something happened, the creators, the business went
right.
bust.
Right, oh, I get
and they
you.
Had to move on.
So they're waiting to get confirmation from you kind
or
of thing.
To get an inside track. And I'd say, you know, I don't know. And well, you might know what happened.
So if you have any gossip
about
anyone.
But you know that question is loaded, you know, to some extent. It's a kind of a nose. All questions are, but some people ask questions because they're genuinely interested. But this is not an interest in a human sense. It's just about being feckin' nosy.
Nosy. Well, nosy. I tend to keep the nosiness for off the air, so I'll quiz you before you leave.
I couldn't have had you, Trina, being nosy, actually.
Look, John, I make a living out of it.
But that's kind of not nosiness. You're not kind of, you know, we had a woman that lived in our village and we used to call her Nos. Not because she talked to her nose and all. She'd say, now, how's your mother keeping? When she knew my mother was after putting her back out, for instance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But did she not put her back out when you said she was fine?
She knew already.
She knew already. She wanted to know the ins and outs and what happened. God forbid, even when my mother passed away, I think someone said to, my wife, she said, and Mrs. Kinney is gone now, God bless her, yeah. And who did she leave the place to?
Stop it.
Yeah.
Nobody asked that question.
Yeah, I swear to God. That's nose.
That's proper
kind,
nosy,
it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, no, that's a bit much now.
That's
come here to
up.
Me. The reason
have
you're
you
into...
Have you wheel-made, Trina? Have you anything left? Have you anything at all? Or can I be buttoning you up?
I just hope somebody leaves something to me, John, because my poor child is going to have nothing.
Well, you're right. Look at
it. The reason you're in today, John, is you're doing a play.
I am.
It is on at the Olympia Theatre. It's a one-man show and it's on the 4th, the 5th and the 7th of September.
Called
Crowman.
Crowman.
Tell me all about it.
Crowman was written by a friend of mine, Katie Holly, and it's her third play. And Katie is from Charleville in County Cork. And she's a very talented woman, young woman, if she doesn't mind me calling her that.
Allowed to say woman on the radio anymore, I'm not sure.
I think you can,
I don't know whether it's legally allowed.
No, a woman is fine, I think.
Woman... It's not a person.
Well, she is a woman.
You know a person who wrote a play.
No, yeah, well, she's a woman. Though.
Come on now. You have to be politically correct now,
Will
John.
Will I ring her and ask her?
Ring her and ask her there.
I'll give her a chat here. I'll see her number on the phone. But anyway, it was written by Katie. And so it's her third play. And I saw her first two plays and I really liked them. And I'd done a bit of... Katie and myself have done a bit of acting together. And she's a brilliant musician as well. And lovely songwriter. She's a very talented young lady. And she said to me, would you be interested in doing... I said, Katie, I'd love to do one if you would do something. So she got to work and she rang me. She says, I think I have an idea for a play. And she had me in mind. So
what's the play about?
It's about a fellow called Dan Lonergan. And I'm Dan Lonergan. And as I said to someone, there's a lot of Dan Lonergan in me, and there's a lot of me in Dan Lonergan. And I suppose it's because being able to work with the writer in the process of putting the piece together, yeah, and rehearsing it, it's not like as if someone just handed you a script, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I suppose being able to work with Katie as well, that we could sit down and talk about the thing. There was a great amount of flux in it, you know, which was really nice. And it's the story of Dan, and Dan is like, I suppose, a lot of people, a lot of us, a lot of me. The best description of the play that I've ever heard, and was said, a friend of mine came to see it, and he said to me afterwards, he said, you know something, there's a bit of Dan in all of us. And I said, yeah, how do you mean? We all want to belong. Uh-huh. And really, it's a play about belonging. And sometimes when you feel that you don't belong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's very, it's beautiful because it's one man piece. So, and Dan lives on his own, and he feels he doesn't kind of belong a little bit. So, and so he stands back, and he, not that he's nosy or anything, he's an observer because he's quite shy and reserved. And he's a guy who lives in the country, but his mind is full of other things. And even as a child, his mind was full of, he was introduced to music at a very young age. And he was listening to jazz when he was a kid growing up. And he's now in his late 50s and 60s. So this would have been in the early 60s of rural Ireland when he was influenced and this stuff was going on. And,
yeah,
and then through the course of his life, he's probably just finds himself a little bit more detached from the society, the community that he lives in, because he does this thing that a lot of people do. He takes over the family business, which is the farm, when he's...
whether he wants to or not, kind of thing.
Yeah. And so he stays to work and make a living. But as he stays to work and grows old, he's more and more on his own a bit, really, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the course of play, you find out that Dan gets a bit of news that the one person, I suppose, in his life that he felt quite understood him, she tragically passes away, and he hears this because he's turning on the radio, which you do in rural Ireland or in a part of Ireland. You don't do the death notices in Dublin, I know, because Dublin is too big, but there's still a huge part of community radio and local radio.
It's
in
massive.
Rural Ireland. Yeah.
I believe it's where they really make all their money. Well, is from the death notices.
Yeah, because, you know, people still have the tradition of going to the funeral, you know.
And it could go on for 4 or 5 minutes, the death notices, on local radio.
Yeah, I know, yeah. It's a huge part of the whole, it's become part of the tradition, whereas before you'd buy the newspaper, as well as get reading the death notices of the newspaper, you listen because you get the details, and they can be more instant in a sense that as soon as it happens, the undertaker informs the radio, local radio station, so you can get it. You don't have to wait till tomorrow to get it, you know.
Yeah.
So this is what happens. Dan and his switches on, because that's what one of the things that he does. He goes to funerals a bit, you know, and it's kind of his social outlet in some ways.
Isn't that sad? Isn't that desperate?
Yeah,
that you
is, yeah.
when especially when you get to an age as well where funerals are the thing that you end up going to
and
all the time.
And he's only in his mid to late 50s.
Yeah.
But it is a tradition, and in some ways he describes it beautifully too. There's a lovely scene in the play after he comes back, and he describes it as it being kind of, it's inherent within us, and it's a ritual. And there's something kind of more pagan about it, but he describes it like it's like nature takes over. We just do it automatically, because in Ireland, this ritual of the passing and death is a very different thing. I know, because I've been to funerals in England and in different places. And, you know, in certain parts of the world, we're quite unique in a sense that there is this thing of someone passing is nearly a celebration of their lives. And you see them off, and the tradition of waking someone in the house and... Mm. You know, in County Clare, if someone dies, they dig the grave themselves, or the family
do they?
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no one to carry the coffin themselves.
Still to this day?
Yeah, that's done, you know, within communities, like, they'll dig the grave, like, themselves, local people will dig it, and even family members will dig it. And I think there's a comfort in that kind of thing, but that's kind of only part, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent now, it's not all about funerals, but it's just, his mind works like that, and he sees these things, and he's able to put them into this lovely kind of, and he describes them all, everyone at the grave has been, we were all the one tribe, all in the same time. Like he said, if death was a song, well then today we were the harmony. Because today we knew instinctively what the tune was. So he's got a great, lovely mind, and he's colourful, and it's a bit of a roller coaster. And because he's on his own and he lives with the dog, he talks to the dog. The audience never sees the dog, but they love the dog. I know that because people have told me, God, that dog was brilliant. And we never
see
him. He's the best part of the play. The dog that we never
see. How much was the dog paid, though? That's the question.
The great thing about having a dog that's not there, you know, you press a button and he barks. And he goes, isn't that right, pup?
And I believe you got a standing ovation when you played at the Cork Midsummer Festival as well. It went really well there.
Every night. Every night since. Yeah, it's just amazing.
Is there pressure though, John, because it is a one man show, to get everything right, to not lose your line? And because I would have a terrible memory for something like that. Is there pressure not to make mistakes?
Well, you can't make mistakes. I mean,
I suppose there's no one to correct you.
You don't even think about your line because, or your lines, because if you're in character, you're not thinking about it. You're just doing it. And you're not thinking about what's coming next. You just know what's going to come.
Okay.
And that's the thing, because the very minute you start to think about it, you're gone out of character because
uh-huh.
you're thinking of something else.
Yeah,
you should never think about, because when you start to think what's coming next, you're going to forget what's coming next, or else you're just going to ruin what you're doing at the moment. So it just, it'll all come out. You've got to believe that it all comes out mm-hmm. and it comes out.
Having the belief in yourself.
I'm kind of good. I'm good at that because I can remember things.
Good. I believe you get up at the crack of dawn. Is that true?
I did. I was up at 5 this morning.
Is that something you do all the time, or when you've got media commitments?
No. I like to get up. I get up with the sun.
But most people in showbiz now are night owls.
When I go out, I like to go out and sing a few songs in the local pub and have the crack.
So hang on a second, John. Are you up at 5 a.m. because you're on the way home?
No, I'm up at because I just like to get up early. I mean, and I think where I live, the morning time, if the day is going to be bad, you can be sure that the morning is 99% of the time is going to be beautiful. The morning for me is always beautiful. You know?
Oh, that's a lovely way of thinking about it, yeah.
Things kind of, the sounds and everything and just everything that happens in the morning, the place, it's like, you know, things come alive. You know?
Yeah, do you sleep much then?
Well, I can do, I can, but I like to wake early. That's it, it's a habit, I don't know what this, you know.
And you've always been like that. Yeah. Now, we mentioned there the last time you were in, there was craziness in the studio. We were picking me up in the air and everything.
Yeah.
And Mary McAvoy was in with you. Yeah. Biddy from Glenroe. Everyone knows Biddy, of course.
Because
you're doing The Matchmaker. And you've done it again.
Yeah, we're doing it again. We have done it again. And we've just finished. We'll be back in Dublin with it again sometime in early November, I think, for a week. So, and we go back out to a bit more work with it. It kind of won't let us, which is lovely because I like working with Mary. I think Mary at the moment now is off directing some opera around town and involved with some singers, and she's working on different projects, you know, and I'm off doing this. And, you know, next year I think we might go back and hopefully do something different together, you know, because we both want to go back and do something together again, because it's we've had a great old spin with things, you know, they've been super,
yeah,
you know.
Definitely. And next year you've got a big wedding anniversary. Did you know that?
I probably have, yeah. I know it's 35 years, is it more? What is it?
I thought it was 30, you know?
No, we're over the 30 mark, believe me.
Are you over the 30?
Yeah.
Was it not 1990 you were married?
I think, it was before that.
Do you know what? We're going to leave the interview there because we're going to get you in trouble.
You won't get me to trouble at all. Marriage is the worst in the world, like, you know. We'd have to remind ourselves it's our wedding anniversary, you know. Do you know, we got married, I'll tell you, we got the cheapest wedding ever. Not that we didn't want. We sent out our wedding invitations in black envelopes, right? We bought secondhand suits. I bought 2 secondhand suits. I sold the jacket of one of them to the main chef in the Great Southern Hotel in Killarney for €200 when the 2 suits cost me €5 in the secondhand shop. Margie made her own wedding dress. We had such crack. We had great fun.
You
because
just decided to go first.
Just to do our own thing. We had no speeches, no nothing. Everyone came. We had a great time. We had a lot of people and friends came. When they walked into the room, there was no tables. They said, what's going on here? They said, the bar is open. We start there. And we said, just enjoy the day. And it started there. And she didn't end for 2 days.
Yeah. And she's still sticking by you. Hasn't gotten rid of you yet, John.
She hasn't. She's a great woman. Trina, I'm blessed with her, we say. As I'm blessed with her, you know. Absolutely.
John, thanks for coming in today.
Not Trina.
We'll go see you at the Olympia Theatre. The Olympia, the 4th, the 5th and the 7th of September.
September.
All the details are online there, of course. Thanks a million, John, for coming in.
Thanks, Trina.
This
Thanks
is
for
something
having
for the
me.
Weekend. And you see, I didn't ask you any probing questions, did I?
Not too much.
Not too nosy.
Just
a little bit nosy, but not too.
Not nosy.
Thanks, John. It's something for the weekend on Classic Hits.